I'm Gab. He's Jules. It's the Gab and Jules Show on this snowy Monday, although it's turned to slush, which is basically snow.
Yeah.
Snow with the fun taken out of it, essentially. But what's more fun is what we're going to talk about today, because it was a packed weekend of action once again around Europe, around Madrid, getting a big, big scare. Messi coming on and scoring. Cristiano Ronaldo scoring a great goal. Manchester United giving up a late equalizer. But we have to start with the rivalry that's defined the last couple of years in the Premier League, Liverpool and Manchester City. Manchester City coming out 4-1 victors. They now have an enormous 10-point lead and a game in hand. Mark Ogden's going to join us in the middle, but at the start, though, Jules, I want you to tell us what you witnessed. You were both at the game, guys. Jules, you were right there afterwards. Jurgen Klopp did not take this well, which you would have expected, but he doesn't have much patience for silly questions, yeah?
No, you're right. A lot of frustration, I think, which you would understand, but he came to do interviews with international broadcasters, and he was asked a question by one of us about, do you think you can still cash City? Can you still win this title? You're 10 points behind.
Let's be clear, it wasn't you who asked this dumb question.
No, okay, I would not have asked that question. I think I knew the answer. But someone else did, and Klopp's answer was like, really? Really? You're asking me that question? Really? You've got two questions to ask me, because that was the deal, and you're wasting one question with that question. And so the guy was like, and the club said, like, you should prepare your questions, you know, better. This is crazy. They're running away with the title. They're 13 points clear, because you already think that they've beaten Everton already in that game in hand. And club, I think, both showing the frustration and also showing maybe the side of him that we hadn't seen too much, really, since he coming here, is that a bit, you know, when things don't go his way, maybe he's not the kind of smiley, full of energy guy that we used to see more.
I mean, who knows what
you
happens
can understand it.
Behind closed doors. I can completely understand
it.
And I'll put my cards on the table. I am a fan of Klopp. But, Augie, this is something new, and it's not just there. It's the Alisson cold feet comment. It was some of the pregame stuff with Pep. Are you surprised? Should we be reading anything into this?
I don't think so. I just think it's, you know, most top managers tend to be different when they're losing games, aren't they? They're not as calm and serene as happy as when they're losing as when they are winning. I mean,
you don't expect them necessarily.
No. You could have just said, like, oh, they're too far ahead now. Well done.
Well,
I don't know. There was a million answers you could have given.
Listen, I think that was you said it was a dumb question. I think it was a great question, because it got a great response and a great answer. And the Klopp mask, you know, slipped, didn't he? He got Klopp to show his true emotions. What else would you ask the guy? You know, oh, it was a cold day today. He's disappointed with the result. Oh, yeah, Alisson had cold feet. No, get the guy to show his emotions. And Klopp is an emotional guy. So I think it's normal that they react like that. I'd prefer him to react like that. I don't want managers to put on a blank expression and tell us nothing. I think it's better that way. So, the pre-match stuff with the Man City had a week break was a bit ridiculous, because our 2 week break, as he suggested, it was a bit ridiculous. But, you know, that's what managers do. And they try to gain any little advantage. Most of the time, it's pointless. I think it was pointless on this occasion. But, no, I'm more than happy to see Klopp lose his temper, show his emotions, because it shows that, you know, he actually cares.
But you saw the pattern all season, you know, against the calendar, against the games they played with Des Kelly on BT Sport, with Jeff Shreves on Sky. There was those clashes regularly, you know, on the injuries and on this and on that. There was a lot of times where club this season has been far more angry, it seems, than any time before.
Probably because he's incredibly frustrated, because he knows the clock is ticking. There's a window of opportunity for this team to continue winning, closing. And they've had an incredible, almost diabolical, satanic rash of injuries this season, which I think has affected them.
Of course.
Klopp came out and said that this game could have easily ended in a draw and that Liverpool played well. I got to say, I do feel like saying, what game were you watching? Because I thought City pretty much wiped. I was only watching on TV. It felt like City wiped the floor with them, apart from that Salah header at the beginning. The Mane header.
Yeah, Mane header.
And the penalty, which is kind of gifted to them. I didn't see Liverpool really creating much. Were City that good? Can we show City some love and just not be all negative about Klopp, Augie?
No, I thought City were great on Sunday. I thought that they had a fantastic game plan. Guardiola attacked Liverpool's full backs throughout the day, particularly Alexander Arnold, and it worked. I think that in the past teams have gone to Anfield and they've been terrified of the full backs because they're so good going forward. But if you put pressure on them and push them back, as City did yesterday, you can have a lot of joy. So, and I also think as well, I mean, the old cliche of the Anfield experience, the Anfield atmosphere. Liverpool are really suffering for the absence of fans. You know, I've seen them now in recent weeks against City, against Brighton, against Man United, and each game they didn't win. And there are times in games when you know the crowd is going to get up and give some impetus and momentum. And Liverpool are getting none of that. And they are one of the teams that really kind of grows with the atmosphere. And in the past, we've seen City suffer for it at Anfield. City kind of have cowered in the past at Anfield because of the noise and the way it raises the home side. So Liverpool are really suffering for the lack of home fans at the moment.
Yeah, we don't need Klopp to make excuses. We've got Augie doing it for him. You know, the pandemic and the closed stadiums. Jules, one thing that Pep did, which surprised me, I thought Gabriel Jesus was going to start in this game, especially playing against, you know, two midfielders converted to center backs. Instead, this is why Pep's a far more successful manager than I am, he plays Phil Foden up front. We called it a false nine because that's what we do when midfielders play up front. He sometimes went back, sometimes he ran behind, sometimes, I mean, it was a tremendous performance, I thought, from Foden.
It was great, and I think he worked a little bit better when they tweaked a little halfway through the first half. Bernardo Silva played much closer to Foden than he was in the first half of the first half, and he worked much better because there was also a time where Foden was a bit too isolated. But it was great, and also, well, remember the discussion we had about Gundogan, I think a few shows ago, when we said, You benefit from him and from this intelligence that he has far more when there's no number nine, because he can make those runs. He's so clinical, as we saw in this game, compared to when you've got Gabriel Jesus there, who he doesn't have as much freedom in the box than he would do. And I think the Foden-Gundogan / Bernardo Silva partnership worked so well the whole game. They could not stop them.
Yeah, Augie, I want to stick with Foden a little bit because obviously, there was a whole issue with him when he made his debut very, very young with Manchester City, and he was coming on, and some people said he needs to play more, and he wasn't playing that much. This really seems to be the season where, I'm not saying he's becoming replaceable, because sometimes he comes off the bench, but he fills so many roles, so many different positions, central midfield, out wide, obviously up front. Can you talk a little bit about that, because I was actually thinking about sort of this new generation of young English midfielders and how well-rounded they are, and it occurred to me that a lot of them have this kind of versatility. Certainly Jack Grealish does. You know, Madison, we've seen him both play wide and central. Mason Mount is another one where we've seen this side of him. You spend a lot of time talking to youth coaches, talking about this development. Is this something that's almost a result of the academy system, or maybe they try to make better rounded players, maybe multifunctional players, rather than, you know, winger, attacking midfielder, striker?
Yeah, I mean, it's often been a criticism of the academy system that they are trying to overdevelop the players in a technical sense. And bear with me on this, in the sense that they focus so much on control, tricks, you know, one touch, two touch, they take away some of the more basic elements of the game. But you're now seeing it, you know, it's probably been a 10-year program. You're now seeing it in people like Foden, Grealish, etc. I think Foden, those players that you mentioned, I think he's an amalgamation of all three. He's got the pace, he's got the goals, he's got the creativity. And I think, you know, he has been the one player that people have been waiting to see. And I think, with the Euros being postponed last summer and potentially, hopefully, being on this summer, I think that year has bought him incredible amount of time and has made him go from being a guy that might have made the squad, the England squad, to a guy that will make the team. And I think, you know, people have said in the past, well, you know, Pep's been holding him back and he's not playing him often enough. I think at times that has been justified, but City were also determined not to loan him out. There was this clamour, loan him out, getting games. And City's point of view was, well, what is the point of loaning him to a lower level Premier League club or a higher level championship team, and basically allow him to develop bad habits? You know, why would we send our jewel in the crown to be kicked off the pitch at Preston or at Barnsley when he can learn on the training pitch every day with Guardiola, with David Silva, with Bernardo Silva?
Okay, sorry, can I just interrupt you a second? I appreciate your point about Preston and Barnsley. Just in the interest of fairness, can you not show your anti-Northern bias? Can you mention one lumpy agricultural Southern team?
Yeah.
So maybe,
Bristol
example,
City?
Barnsley and Bristol City. Yeah, that works. Yeah. You know, Barnsley and Gillingham, yeah, maybe.
As Jules can testify, having been at Anfield yesterday, it's a lot colder in the north than it is in the
oh
south.
Oh my
Cup,
so God!
I'm
yes, just,
I'm talking about that. Anyway, so but City wanted to stay at the Etihad and learn around the players, and I think that has been borne out. I do think that if you look at his starts over the last 12 months, he's played virtually half of his games at City, so he really has become a first team player. Now, prior to that, he was held back, but in the last 12 months, certainly post pandemic, he has become a first team regular, and I think we're seeing the advantage of that now. He's a fantastic player, fantastic talent.
So he's only 20. You don't think there's a point where he will have to have one position? Do you think that can still work, that sometimes he plays on the right, sometimes as a false number nine, sometimes as a second striker, sometimes on the left? Because you mentioned Maddison Grealish. They still, certainly at club level, they still have one position. Grealish always plays. He can move during the game, but he plays on the left, and Simon Maddison plays as a number 10 centrally. Foden really is the one that moves, and that versatility is great. But don't you think there's a point in a career where, okay, to really improve and to make this position your own, you need to be fixed in a way? Well,
see, this is the thing. I make a parallel with Mason Mount, who's another guy who's played different positions,
yeah,
right? I think it depends on the players around him. Kevin De Bruyne is a greater player than Phil Foden. I think we'd all agree that, you know, at least right now,
yeah,
anyway,
yeah,
right? So obviously that position is going to be filled. He's not going to replace Kevin De Bruyne when Kevin De Bruyne is fully fit. So in that sense, I think from Pep's perspective, it's... I think he will play people in their positions if you're a total specialist like Rodri, or if you're that much better than everybody else and you bring that much added value. Mm. Otherwise, he loves the versatility. We've seen Sterling play in different positions too,
yeah, no,
right?
No, I'm just saying
the way Mahrez interprets the position.
There was no criticism. So, I was just wondering, for Foden's own development.
If Foden gets to the point where he is, you know, one of the two or three most important players for City, then I think he will have his own position.
Yeah,
but I think for now he can bring such a value added because he presents his versatility means he can create such mismatches with different players with his style of play. That burst of pace that he has
on that goal is incredible.
I mean, yeah, you don't expect. I mean, right, I thought Andy Robertson was terrible there, but the acceleration
and how quickly he shoots after the touch, and
we don't expect number 10s to be sprinters. Mm. This guy's a sprinter as well, you know, which is pretty remarkable.
Yeah. I think one thing that I just want to add on that, I think the fact that people say he's been held back a lot, I think, you know, you look at a lot of young players, certainly developing the Premier League, they play a lot of football between the late teens and early 20s, and it does have an impact late in the career. You look at people like Rooney, Michael Owen, Rashford, to a certain extent, they pick up injuries, and how much these injuries impact on what they do late in the career by playing so many games, 18, 19, 20. Foden hasn't had that burden. Foden has been gradually nursed into the team, and I think that will also benefit his longevity.
That's a good point.
That is a very good point. I want to make another point about Pep here, because we've talked about this before. I dial back 12 months to the summer before last, and it looked to everybody. This was the summer that Rodri arrives at Manchester City, and it looked to a lot of people like, okay, City, you know, you've just done so well, you've won the title. Why are you just adding Rodri?
Sure, summer company leaves.
So companies left. And you look at your central defenders. You have Stones, who at the time wasn't playing well. You had Laporte, who was fine. You had Otamendi, who's got his Otamendi issues. You know, you had Eric Garcia, who was about 12 at the time. And it seems so obvious. You know, go and buy a central defender. I wrote a whole piece about this. Why not double down? Some people even came to me and said, well, I think the reality is that, you know, they're spending 70, 80 million on Rodri. If they spend another 70, 80 million on a top central defender, that turns the screws on Pep. How could I do even better next year? And you can't really do better after getting 99 points or whatever it was, or 100 points, right? But then I go back and I say, you know what? If they had added a top central defender then, a year ago, maybe Liverpool don't win the title last year. Maybe Manchester City win the Champions League. It seems interesting to me that the simple addition of Ruben Dias, who, with all due respect, he's been phenomenal this season, right? But let's go back a year. And if anybody 12 months ago had said, oh, yeah, Ruben Dias is
Lyon,
one of the top five.
He almost joined Lyon that summer.
That's what I mean, right? This is a guy who's on his way to Lyon.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's put this in context, because, you know, he came on a lot of people's radar when he signed for City. There's just a huge jump from Lyon to City in terms of wages, in terms of fee. And it gets me wondering, like, did they miss a trick a year ago? And also, is Ruben Dias that good? Or did we underestimate him when he arrived and has Pep made him even better than what he was?
So I think for his age, I think he's a really good player already. I think Pep has improved him, certainly. You saw with the mistake that he made on Salah, on the Liverpool goal, that there's still, I think, a lot of things where he can still improve. But the only thing I don't know is maybe they only had money for Rodri the summer before. I don't know. Maybe he was more the, okay, we need a successor to Fernandinho because he's 34 and he's maybe not going to play at this level for a long time. So what do we do? Is he a centre-back or number six? And there's the Rodri opportunity. If we don't do Rodri now, we might not be able to do it. I don't know. There may be a lot of factors of why they only did Rodri. But I think you're right. And
we seems weird, though. You've just added one of the Premier League with 100 points, and you can't go and add it. Anyway, Mr. Trick. But going forward, we were talking about this off-air before. Obviously, Sergio Aguero, his contract is winding down. We haven't seen him most of the season. Mm. I think there's an assumption that they're not going to extend his contract, sure, give a whole load of money to a guy at his age with his injury record.
Yeah.
Do they need another center forward? And if so, what should the profile be? Augie?
Well, City, certainly under Abu Dhabi's ownership the last 10, 12 years, they've always gone for the the emerging talent, the best young player out there, or the best player at the time. I think they did that with Aguero. He was, you know, early 20s when he signed for Atletico. If you're looking for someone to fit that profile again, now, you're probably looking at Erling Haaland, who is a different kind of player, but he is the next big thing, undoubtedly, in terms of centre-forwards. He's just way ahead of anybody else. I mean, you know, I can't think of anyone in a comparable nature that would be in the same fit. The issue with Haaland is, you know, would there be a problem with signing a Raiola player? We know that Pep has history of being a Raiola. Man City have history of being a Raiola.
Are we grown-ups here or what?
Seriously.
No, we're not.
We're grown-ups here. I'm sorry, but Chicky Begarishten can do the talking with Mino. Pep doesn't have to do the talking with Mino, right?
No, he does it.
I would be amazed if a club like City said about someone like Haaland, no, we can't sign him because of his agent, surely.
I agree. I mean, listen, that was part of the reason Man United didn't sign him in the end, that they didn't want to be, you know, hooked up to Raiola's escape clause or transfer trigger fee that they wanted with Haaland. So there are questions to overcome. I agree, it would be ridiculous for a club like Man City not to sign a player, but they dealt with Raiola with Balotelli. And we know that Pep and Raiola have history with the Zlatan thing. So it's an interesting one. If Pep doesn't want to get involved with Raiola and the kind of the issues that may come with it, you know, would Raiola happily send Haaland to City and not want him to move 2 or 3 years down the line? Does he want to go to Spain in the future? Do he want to go to Italy? It's a factor, but I think that City have to overcome it. They've got the money to do it, certainly.
I mentioned Haaland on French TV on Saturday, and then they put the clip on Twitter, and I got a lot of people saying, oh, it's not the profile. It's not a Pep player. What?
Do they say that because he's tall and strong?
I don't know.
Oh, look, he's like Ibra. Like, he's not. He's completely different.
Haaland can play.
Well, that works out well, didn't it?
Yeah, but Haaland would be perfect in a Pep. Of course, there's a bit of time where he will have to adapt, and the press is very different to, I suspect, although at Salzburg, the press was pretty hectic too. So, you know, I've got no doubt. Don't tell me he's not a Pep Pro fan. Oh, no, doesn't really suit or doesn't really fit. It would be
perfect.
Well,
Lewandowski isn't a small little centre forward.
Exactly.
But, you know, he's a tall, classic centre forward, and he worked great with Pep. So, yeah, you're right. There is this kind of perception that Pep only likes 5'6", 5'8" strikers. You can play all across the front three, but it's wrong.
Obviously, if you can get Haaland at a regular price, at a reasonable price, you get him. Personally, I think, even though with all the pandemic, financial losses, doom and gloom, I think if you're Borussia Dortmund, you're more likely, you know, I don't think you need to sell Haaland and Sancho, and I still think Sancho is more likely to leave.
Let me put you this, okay? Let me put you this. The following summer, so summer 2022, there's the release clause that kicks in Erling Haaland's contract of €75 million, mm-hmm. right? Imagine Dortmund don't qualify for the Champions League, which is very likely. They're sixth right now.
Yes, okay? That is an issue.
What if City or anyone else comes in now this summer and say to Vasco and Dortmund, okay, you're not in the Champions League next season. Soon, it will be available for €75 million. We give you, let's say City have the €100 million now, or PSG or Real Madrid, I don't know, whoever. Yeah. If you're Vasquez, what do you do? So you have the 100 million now.
Look, I think if they don't qualify for the Champions League, I think that's a game changer. Because you can very easily justify it. Like, oh yeah, here, we'll take the 100 million now, which is worth a lot more in a post-pandemic football. Yeah. And we have Moukoko there already. Yeah. So what do I need? We need, you know. He's...
And even Holland has to play in the Champions League anyway.
Of course. But assuming they do qualify for the Champions League, I'm just wondering. I mean, I think it's more likely that maybe they go for somebody else. Maybe they go for somebody less developed, look to develop him say, look, we can do fine with, we have Ferran Torres, we have Gabriel Jesus, you know, we have Foden, as we found out, we have Sterling.
Maybe.
You know, let's add another really talented kid center forward that I can mold from the ground up in the Pep way. I want to throw something else out there now and circle it back to Liverpool, though. I wanted to say nice things. I didn't want us all to be negative and whatever. We know the mitigating circumstances with Liverpool because Klopp's told us. We can all count the number of players who aren't there. I'm just wondering now of the knock-on effect. That question, which probably should have been asked, what the heck happens if you don't finish top four?
Yeah.
Because this is a team, this is a club that, you know, aren't cash rich, right? Yeah. They're they've got big profit. We've explained this. I've written about it. Right? They're two different things. And they've already pushed the boat out to sign Diogo Jota, right? Yeah. They did this over the summer. And
they still owe 35 million to Wolves.
And Thiago Alcantara as well. Yeah. These are big financial commitments. The Wijnaldum stuff is dragging on. I'm just wondering, what is the long-term thing here? Because, Augie, when you and I talked about it, you're like, well, the front three are all making a lot of money and getting older, and they're all the same age, annoyingly. But, you know, you can just sell Salah for 80 million or Mane for 80 million. We talked about it. That ain't going to happen now.
No.
These three guys are going to stick around, yeah? So what happens?
Yeah. Well, look, we have to say the caveat is if they miss out on the top four, they could still win the Champions League, which is not beyond Liverpool's abilities and their history. They tend to pull it out of the fire more than once. They have a problem. They have a problem because all the front three are getting on in years. Salah doesn't look overly happy. We keep hearing noises coming out of the Salah camp from Salah himself that, you know, his future's up to Liverpool. And you do wonder whether Salah is beginning to think of options abroad. I mean, we keep hearing Mbappe, don't we, for Liverpool, which just doesn't stack up whatsoever.
Who keeps saying this? I'm really curious. I'm really curious. Can we name names? No, honestly, because I'm all for wild rumours.
No, I know that he. It's a club that he would like to play for.
Right.
Okay.
Not in the Europa League.
Not in the Europa League. And two, they really. I don't think they can. They don't have the cash to afford him anywhere right now.
This is one of these myths that comes about because Liverpool have got a Nike kit that and Mbappe wears Nike that it will have these you know sports manufacturer deals. They never seem to come off. And I must have, this the Mbappe to Liverpool thing has been. I think it's been bubbling away for over a year now, and it doesn't make sense. It doesn't have no logic in terms of the finances, in terms of the other options that Mbappe would have at his disposal. You know, he could go wherever he wanted to. He could earn more money elsewhere. PSG could get a bigger fee elsewhere. It'd be a great signing, be a fantastic replacement for Salah, and you know, Salah to PSG, Mbappe to Liverpool, all kind of makes sense in a kind of fantasy football kind of way. But why would Mbappe want to go to Liverpool when they look like they're a club that might just be about to go through a transition and a rebuild?
Maybe he wants to be part of the rebuild. I mean, I go back to one point about Klopp. Is Klopp extended his contract to 2024, right? Which means that he will necessarily be part of the rebuild.
Yeah.
He necessarily knows there's no way he can keep this team together till then, right? And that is a big commitment from Klopp. So I'm just wondering whether they shouldn't have moved towards the rebuild last summer. You know, made that step, and maybe the pandemic, maybe a million different things.
Yeah.
You know, and also it's tough to, as you and I know, Mark, when we did the Liverpool keeper jump, it's tough to go to somebody and say like, okay, Jordan Henderson, well, the numbers here say that you're 32 and blah, blah, blah. So let's, you know, like it doesn't work that way.
But you talk about Klopp though, Gab. I mean, do we think that he will still be there in 3 years' time in the current situation where he's having to chase, he's having to rebuild, he's getting quite grumpy on the touchline with television reporters. Does it really suck up that he'll be there in front of
you? Are you suggesting that Klopp is going to resign or might resign? Because I don't think he will resign. And I certainly don't think he's going to be sacked. So I assume...
Listen, I don't think he's going to resign at all. Not at the moment. But we know that managers and coaches have a shelf life. It takes a lot out of them, this job. I just think he's been there 5 years now, another 3 years. It's a draining, emotional job, especially at Liverpool, where there's so much emotion attached to it. Let's just be a bit realistic that in 2024, when his contract expires, it's probably, I'd say it's 50-50 that he's there when his contract expires.
How difficult a rebuild is it? Because if you don't have, you can't rebuild with players from Preston. No offense to Preston, but Ben Davies,
absolutely,
is a, you know, he's a squad member. He's a buddy. He's a squad player. He's 2 million, but you can't rebuild a super competitive team with players from Preston.
Look, I think it's early to talk about
2 million.
Okay, so I think it's early to talk about rebuild right now. But
yeah, but how hard would it be?
Okay, when we do talk about, I mean, and this is the exercise that Mark and I played last summer, but. Effectively, right? If you look at this, if you project 2-3 years down the line, you know, three of the back four, you should be fine age wise, assuming they all come back from injury or whatever. Allison's fine, as long as he doesn't play like he did this weekend. You have Fabinho, Curtis Jones. It's a decent starting point in midfield. You need to think about adding another guy, maybe, or unless Naby Keita comes good, but you know, we've been waiting for that bus for a long time. Up front, you have Jota. You can maybe coax one of the other three guys to continue being productive later. Firmino's one guy I would imagine could be productive, you know, into when he's 32, 33. So I don't think it's necessarily an enormous...
You don't think you need loads of money to rebuild this squad?
You need money. Of course, you need money. You need money. You need some money, you know. And but again, the post-pandemic economy is going to be different. We chuck around these 70 million, 100 million... I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how much they exaggerate losses or whatever. But you talk to people and they say, look at this last transfer market. This summer's going to be the same. You know, we might not have a 100 million euro footballer for another 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what some people are saying. So that remains to be seen. I want to throw one other thing out there just to wrap this up, but more of a tactical thing, because you guys were there. You guys got to see this very clearly. There's a school of thought that says... Maybe Klopp, you know, I thought Liverpool started the game very slowly, playing slowly, almost as if they were playing with fear, actually. What if Liverpool just sucked it up, played, you know, whatever, Phillips and just two specialist center backs or actual center backs, just so you could have had Fabinho and Henderson in midfield, just so you could have been, you know, you could have rattled them in midfield, tried to take the game to them or been more aggressive that way. I mean, I know we're second-guessing here.
I don't know, because I thought the intensity in the first half, even from Liverpool, was outstanding.
And really?
Mark and I, all you could hear was, press them, squeeze, press. Klopp and Guardiola and their backroom staff were clapping and cheering every time they were either recovering the ball, forcing a mistake, forcing a ball in touch, everything. You should have seen it. It was incredible. It was like, and because you could only hear them, it was stunning. So, and I thought what really killed them is that early goal in the second half, because they came back out of the break and they were just not ready.
I had to watch it on television with that stupid fake crowd noise, and I was too lazy to go and find the remote control, and so I had no idea.
Maybe Augie,
do you agree, Augie? Were Liverpool super fast and intense in the first half?
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, I do take Jules' point about the touchlines. It was like being on a Sunday morning football match with two big rivals and a lot of people shouting and screaming at the referee. It was noticeable the rivalry between the two teams and the two coaching staff, how much noise was being made down there. That was definitely a point. But I do think that Liverpool need Henderson back in midfield quickly. They need Fabinho back in midfield quickly. But you're right, by putting him back in midfield, it doesn't have to leave him with a big weakness at the back, because, let's be fair, Ben Davies has come from Preston. He's never played above the Championship in his career. And Kabak has come from Schalke. And Kabak have had a terrible season this year in the Bundesliga. So what his confidence is like, I don't know. So you're putting two centre-halves together who haven't played together before, who haven't played in the Premier League before.
But what about Phillips and Rhys Williams? Could you try? Listen, I know the next game is Leicester.
Rhys Williams at Old Trafford was awful.
No, I know.
We're second guessing. I like to imagine Klopp sat there and thought about it and says, what are my combinations? Yeah. I'm giving up here, I'm gaining there. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Next game is Leicester. So, okay, maybe Leicester is not the right game to try. But what if you tried Rhys Williams and Phillips and then move Fabinho or even just one of them and move either Fabinho or Henderson back in midfield?
Yeah. I'd put Henderson back in midfield. I'd try Milner at centre half. If you're going to put midfield in centre half, I'll put Milner there, because I think because Henderson, you need Henderson in midfield. I think if you take Milner,
surely Rhys Williams or Nate Phillips would go ahead of Milner at centre back. No.
No.
Wait, you're talking about 5'4" James Milner, yeah?
Or Shaqiri? What about Shaqiri centre back?
Wait, is there somebody smaller? No, okay, okay. I'm kidding. Milner's, I'm assuming, is probably 5'7 or 5'8, right?
No, but he's got the experience and the intelligence to play that, I guess. But.
I have this image in my mind of, you know, from the other day when Klopp's hugging him, and Milner looks like a small child next to Klopp. I love that.
Him like this.
But that's because also it's Milner's innocence and the Milner image. So you'd go for a combination. Look, we'll see what he does. Yeah. I mean, I think now it's important that they get top four. But at least this wasn't the game to give Kabak and Davies their debut. I can see that. I can see why you'd be reticent to do that. Also, Kabak's also very, very young. Mm. But I think
obviously Leicester. And if Vardy's fit for Leicester, I'm not sure if he will be. You wouldn't risk that defensive partnership against Leicester with away to Leicester. So it's which game do you pick? Everton at home after that. There are a lot. Calvert-Lewin. Where do you pick a soft landing for these guys to come in? It's difficult.
Leipzig. Imagine if they get hammered by Leipzig.
To be honest, if you play a high line, I'm less worried about putting a young centre back in there.
Who can run.
I mean, honestly, ball over the top to Jamie Vardy. Okay, fine. Go and chase the guy who's 34 years old. So he's fast. Kabak is presumably fast too, right? Yeah. I mean, normally you prefer the sprint. You would imagine that a center back, in very general terms, is going to have a better acceleration and more speed over longer distances than a central midfielder. So, I don't know. Anyway, Mark, we've talked a lot. It's been great. It's been fun. It's been real. Have a good one. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough of that. How about some quick hits?
Let's go, Gab.
Lionel Messi comes in just before the hour mark with Barcelona goal down, scores straight away. In fact, quickest goal ever since coming off the bench in Barcelona history, or at least in Messi's minutes, Barcelona history. And Barca eventually win 3-2. Jules, that simple? Put the guy who's really good at football on and you know?
Of course it helped because they were so dreadful until he came on, and they were 1-0 down, by the way, and deservedly so.
And he started without Pedri and Messi.
And De Jong, who also were rested. I mean, they played 120 minutes, obviously, on Wednesday in the Copa del Rey, so you can understand the rotation and all of that, but they were really bad. I mean, I made a joke, I think, a couple of weeks ago that Barca with Messi was Elche. I wasn't far from the truth that without Pedri and De Jong and Messi, you're not far from being a very, very random team.
Yeah, who would have thought that the best player in the world, did you really think they would play that poorly?
Be honest.
No. And also, they were still a little bit fortunate because that Trincao goal at the end, which gave them the win, everybody's like, oh, we're so happy for Trincao. I mean, Trincao is kind of like a symbol for so many things that are wrong with Barcelona, the whole fact that he's even at the club.
But they won't. And they're fun to watch. To be fair, there's a lot of things happening all the time with them.
What about your boy Griezmann's enormous slice of luck? If you haven't seen the Victor Ruiz own goal.
The second goal,
But all right, 3 points.
They're there. They go above Real Madrid, and that's all that.
And also, again, and I said this before, the players believe in Koeman because they keep going until the end.
That's
and,
true. It's a positive.
That means something.
Yeah. Manchester United and Everton drew 3-3 at Old Trafford in a wild game. Gab, are you going to tell me that Dominic Calvert-Lewandowski, see what we did there, a buzzer-beating equaliser, was all part of Carlo Ancelotti's plan?
Of course.
It was all prepared. Yes. It was all,
you know.
Carlo.
I thought Everton, went out there and they showed a lot of fight, a lot of resilience against a team that, top to bottom is second in the table for a reason. They came back from two goals down. What I like about it is, and I think this is something Carlo does really, really well, is he puts players in situations where they can make their talent count, right? So playing James in that role, having people make runs around him, so then when he gets the ball, he has the time. I think that makes a big difference. In the end, no, you're not going to, you can't plan on Dominic Calvert-Lewin scoring in that way, and the defensive mistake and the awful defending all round from United. Yeah, but United dropped 2 points there, but Everton will take them. They got 2 games in hand. Do you know that if they win both games in hand, and they won't because one of them is Man City, they go up to third in the table.
I know, it's pretty good.
Sticking with this game, Jules, Solskjaer said they were good going forward, but they have to stop conceding goals at the back. No, duh. Does it mean it's time to drop David De Gea?
Well, first assist of the season for De Gea.
Stop.
Oh, yeah, for Doucouré, against his own team. But it was still a great assist because I'm not sure what he's thinking there on that Doucouré goal. I don't know what he's doing on the Calvert-Lewin goal either. Sometimes he's been good this season. He's been really good this season. At times he's been decisive for them. Other times he's an absolute shambles. So,
he's been really inconsistent.
Yeah, completely. And maybe it's time to give Henderson just a go, just a chance. But don't give him just one game like we saw when he played against Sheffield United. Give him 3 games in a row and see where he's at after that. And you can always go back to De Gea.
Yeah, you can to a point, because then you risk running into a Kepa situation.
Yeah, but and no, then you've if got, you do it cleverly, you can. Juventus beat Roma 2-0 as Cristiano Ronaldo scores a wonder goal. Gab, everybody is praising Pirlo's newfound pragmatism and balance. Are you going to join in?
I'm going to praise him for the result. I thought, ultimately they scored the goal they deserved to win. Cristiano Ronaldo was fantastic, stopping the ball with his studs and then shooting. They figured it was 0.52 seconds before he got the shot off. Tremendous finish. Yeah. The second one was an own goal, but Roma won the expected goals. Roma took 14 shots on goal. Yeah. Juventus took 3 shots on goal. No shots after the two on target, 3 overall.
Yeah.
No shots at all after minute 41.
Yeah.
People are like, oh, Chiellini the warrior. Yeah, okay. They put Chiellini and Bolucci, which meant that they had to defend way deep. This wasn't Pirlo's Juve. This was a throwback to Allegri's Juve.
That's exactly what I thought.
That's fine. You want to do that, that's fine. But this is not the new course that we were told about.
I'm with you, 100%.
And I don't think that this is something that yields rewards long term. Because you have to have a plan. And your plan cannot be based around Cristiano doing something magical every game. And your plan cannot be based around the opposition scoring an own goal like that with Ibanez.
It's not just Bentancur being suspended either. Because I just think Roma are much better playing sides. Yeah. Than Juve are currently. And maybe this is what they would be at some point under Pirlo, but not now.
Paris Saint-Germain beat Marseille as OM's week just gets worse. Jules, but at least Payet got sent off, so there's that. Fans must like that,
I take all of that. It was not a good game, though, to be fair. I mean, Kylian Mbappe scoring after 9 minutes on a great counter-attacking goal, amazing. Di Maria got injured.
What about Icardi scoring with his vertebrae?
Oh, my God, that was good. I mean, that was amazing. There were some good things, but it lacked a bit of intensity, I thought, from both teams, a bit of emotion as well. The fans not being there, we know that.
It's okay, you're still third. You might qualify for the Champions League.
Ooh. Chelsea beat Sheffield United. The Tuchel effect adds up to 10 points in 4 games so far, still unbeaten. Is this making Lampard's tenure look worse?
Yeah, I wouldn't quite go there.
They were not that great against Sheffield.
They weren't that great. Sheffield United have been playing really, really well, but still Sheffield United. He's making some big calls. He's giving everybody a shot. Let's see where it is. I am not going to judge Tuchel until we get some actual consistency in the lineup and we realize who he likes, what he likes, what he doesn't like. Borussia Dortmund lose again 2-1 against Freiburg. Jules, at this rate, they need to start worrying about being in the Champions League next year.
Big time. They're six. They're six in the table. And right now, you see them play. There's no assurances about anything. They can't defend. They can't defend set pieces, which we knew, and it's not new.
Two wonder strikes from Freiburg, but still.
Yeah, but they can't defend full stop anyway. And now when they don't find the fluency and the efficiency up front going forward, they struggle. And we've said it many times, and it's not, again, E.T. It's not, again, Edin Terzic at all. It's just he's not ready for this kind of job. Yeah,
they need to rely on 16-year-old Moukoko to go and turn
which
around.
Is bad. So good luck to them if they want to finish top four, because it won't be easy at all. Bayern won on Friday night. It was a long, long time ago. But Gab, what followed was the trip from hell for them.
Yeah, absolutely. There's regulation. So they played against Hertha. They won 1-0
in Berlin.
They had to fly to Doha to play in the Club World Cup. they somehow were a little bit late on the runway, and apparently planes can't take off until after midnight. So they had, and according to some sources, it was like 11:59 when they were there. So they had to spend 7 hours on the plane. Then they had to, then because the crew had been there too long, there's a mandatory crew change. So then they had to fly to Munich, get a different crew on board, and then they set off to Doha. It's ridiculous. It's like the 12-hour delay.
Why don't they just got off the plane, go into a hotel, and I don't know, stay there and go in the next morning?
I have no idea, it's but, you know, German stuff. Efficiency and logistics. But El Papu Gomez makes his debut for Sevilla as they beat Getafe 3-0. They stay fourth, 1 point behind Real Madrid. Jules, it's Papu time.
It's the Papu dance. It's the Papu dance. I mean, great goal. Although that's
deflected, I know. But it's the Papu. Still. We're still happy. We're still happy.
You know, Lopetegui has played him different position. Even in the same game, he moves him two, three different positions. He gives them that versatility, which you said at the beginning when they signed him.
It's Papu, we love him.
Torino come from three goals down to draw with Atalanta 3-3, but Gab, that's not what we're talking about then.
No, I want to shout out to Andrea Belotti, who
was fouled.
Belotti, this is pretty lovely. Now, he was fouled by Romero, and he immediately gets up and says, no, he didn't touch me, don't book him. And the referee had booked Romero and says, oh gee, thank you for your honesty. There is a story behind this. The week before, when they played Fiorentina, he went head-to-head with Milenkovic, who admittedly is about a foot taller, and then he threw himself to the ground. So I think Belotti's conscience,
But then it's a free kick on the edge of the box, and what does he do? He gives the ball back.
Yeah.
Which is amazing as
he's
well.
He's a gentleman.
You know, a gentleman.
Don't go anywhere, because we've got more quick hits coming up. We back, baby. You good?
Let's go, Gab.
Arsenal fall to Aston Villa 1-0. Jules, that top four finish looks more and more improbable.
I think it's impossible now, Gab. I mean, Arteta said at the end, oh, we dominated in every department. We should have won the game. There were some good things they did. They conceded early. They conceded chances as well. And overall, I didn't think it was enough. I don't think it was good enough.
Yeah, and there were a lot of bad spots. But I think Bellerin is still looking for Grealish.
UEFA have confirmed the first leg of Leipzig Champions League game with Liverpool next week will be played in Budapest. That's the right decision. I mean, this is the only decision they could have taken anyway.
Well, no, there was also talk of reversing the leagues. But look, this is reasonable. Hopefully everybody's safe. That has to come first. And, you know, if you're Leipzig, deal with it. You won't get that phenomenal home support that you get in your closed stadium. But, hey.
Yeah, that's true.
Rafael Varane channels his inner Sergio Ramos and rescues your boy Zizou as Real Madrid come from behind to beat Huesca 2-1. Jules, this was grim.
Huesca. Real Madrid make Huesca look like Bayern Munich. Rafa Mir looked like Lewandowski up front. It was like, what's going on? I was freaking out.
Okazaki, you didn't like that?
Okazaki. Yeah. In the end, they won. It was ugly. It was not good enough. But hey, they'll take the 3 points, get a bit of confidence, and then you move on.
You don't think confidence is the issue? Like, there's one point. I just want to contextualize this, and people are going to accuse me, oh, you're still defending Real Madrid. Okay. At one point, they're 1-0 down at the start of the second half.
Yeah.
Huesca's hit the crossbar twice, right?
Yeah.
Zidane looks to his bench, and what does he see?
Oh, come on.
He sees that there are six people. No, listen. He's on a bench. He only has six substitutes because everybody's hurt or injured or unavailable.
Two goalkeepers, I know.
Two goalkeepers. Okay. Marcelo, who's a walking negative and bad luck charm.
I don't want to see him anyway.
Mariano, who scored like three goals more than you
in his
career.
He's still better than the bench that Huesca had.
And two guys from the youth team is Marvin Clark.
This is not. Not an excuse for me. The starting 11 was strong enough to destroy this Huesca team, and they didn't because they was too predictable. It was just not good enough.
Asensio, okay, it looks ugly.
Sticking with Real Madrid, though, Sergio Ramos opted to have surgery on his knee. Gab, he's out for another 6 weeks, and we missed the Champions League games against Atalanta, and if there's qualification, probably more as well. Does this move the needle a bit, Gab?
It moves the needle in Atalanta's favor. Yeah, I mean, they need Sergio Ramos. It's as simple as that. And look, Atalanta always unpredictable. You don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah, we saw it against Torino. Yeah,
things are going to get ugly very, very fast if they go out against Atalanta, and Ramos is going to be a big miss. Milan beat up Crotone 4-0 to stay top in Serie A. But I know you'd rather just talk Ibrahimovic, since he scored the 500th and 501st goals of his career.
I love that. I especially love the first one that went with Rafael Leao. It was brilliant. Just the understanding that they had, the movement from Ibra. Second one is a more normal Theo Hernandez cross and Ibra who scores. But yeah, I thought it was brilliant. It's 39 and he scored 14 goals in 11 Serie A games. I mean, this is crazy.
Yeah, and they were better when he was injured. It's crazy.
Inter win away to Fiorentina on Friday night, and Nicola Barella impresses again. I mean, he scores the first goal and he's just so good. On the flip side, Gab, the financial situation is really precarious.
Yeah, light and darkness for Inter. Conte was suspended, shouting into the phone.
We could see him like...
It wasn't even his phone. It was like his brother's. It was like next to him, whatever. Barella, phenomenal. Just a tremendous all-around player. Inter basically, we talked about sort of cash versus having money on hand. There's issues in China with the ownership of Suning. They've got two things. One is they're looking for minority investors, and B, they need to refinance the debt. They took a $300 million worth of bonds, and they mature in a year. They need to refinance those. So I think they will eventually, but it's going to cost them. Harry Kane returns and Spurs beat West Brom 2-0 to break a streak of three straight defeats. All well at White Hart Lane now?
Maybe not all well, but it looks certainly much better when he's there. He's much better for Son, who suddenly had his brother again on the pitch and he was all good and they both score and great. But let's not forget that even when Kane was there before the injury, it was not all great either.
And so. Mourinho saying afterwards, like, I don't want to talk about Kane and Son. I want to talk about the whole team because they were all good.
But no. We know, Jose. Cologne win the Rhine derby against your boy Marco Rose and Mönchengladbach. But Gab, what did you make of the trolling at the end?
Yeah, so if you didn't see this, this is kind of cool. Like, when this is a big derby,
yeah,
right?
Huge derby, yeah.
In the past, when Gladbach had won, your boy Marcus Thuram taking the corner flag and running around with it. And I love this because Cologne go into their house and say, hey, we're going to troll you. I love it. This is part of it. People get upset, whatever. But hey, this is part of the fun of the Bundesliga. Wie lustig, as they say. Leipzig stay second in the Bundesliga, 7 points behind Bayern with a 3-0 win over Schalke. Jules, they're finding the groove.
They are. And as we said earlier, Gab, they're playing against Liverpool very soon in a week's time or so. They took their time because I think Mukiele scored just before the break, but they were so good. I mean, there was not even... I don't even think that Schalke had anything going for them in that game. And it was very impressive, I thought, from Leipzig.
West Ham, it's Schalke. They could get relegated to USL soon.
Yeah, still. West Ham and Fulham draw 0-0, but Gab, we saw one of the most absurd VAR decisions in recent history between Mike Dean and Lee Mason. Lee Mason was the VAR referee. Mike Dean was on the pitch.
So basically, this was Susek and Mitrovic, and they're marking on a set piece. Susek tries to wriggle free, lifts his arm very slowly, I might add.
Yeah.
And the funny thing, Mike Dean's looking straight at it. Lee Mason, the VAR, calls him over and says, oh, take another look at this. And Susek gets sent off. Now, they're going to appeal this. People here in England have made it a VAR issue. It's not a VAR issue.
No,
it's an issue of two donuts making stupid decisions. Mason feels if you take another look at it, that's fine. Dean, you can see it's not violent. It's whatever. Silly.
Why did they do that?
I don't know.
Please explain to me.
David Beckham has reportedly pumped another $15 million into his club, Inter Miami.
Yep.
Jules, is this mostly to cover Phil Neville's wages? No.
Maybe not his wages, but maybe the pay package that he's going to take when they sack him. No, you didn't hear this. I'm only joking, of course.
I have to say this, right? I was wondering, like, why is this news? Why is this on my radar? And then, I don't know. I'm going to speculate. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't think it was some crack investigative reporting that revealed that David Beckham
is... I think
this is Inter Miami releasing an announcement through their PR company so that they can be in the news again. Because anything that you put the word Beckham on, he's an owner.
But
he's contractually obligated to put this. It's not like he's like, oh, let me go and gift. If he made an investment in the club.
But maybe he wants to make his team better, stronger, the squad stronger.
Well, with the MLS salary cap and the lockout, which I know we're getting to next.
Brother? Is there another Higuain's brother that they can bring in? Yeah. A third brother or something? Or Matuidi's brother? Something like that. Hey, we wish them all the luck for the seasons to come. Because it looks like there could be a season gap. Because sticking with MLS, our colleague at ESPN, Jeff Carlisle, is reporting that the owners and the players' union are close to a deal to avoid a lockout, so the season will happen. Gab, it's hard maybe for people who don't really follow US sport to understand what the concept of a lockout here and not having a season.
Yeah, so basically this isn't a strike, this is a lockout. This is effectively the owners going on strike. So in MLS, they have collective bargaining, which I think is fundamentally a good thing. I think they should have it in European leagues as well. However, which is basically you create minimum guarantees for every player and minimum responsibilities of the players towards the clubs and backwards. But if the collective bargaining agreement has to be renewed every so often because it expires and conditions change. And it, when they can't reach an agreement on it, the owners say, "Ah, fine. Well, then I'm going to lock you out, and there's no season." Right? That's what it calls a lockout. You can't play. To me, this whole concept is bizarre. Like, lockout shouldn't be on the table. I realize you're in this for business and stuff, but you know what? You want to be part of FIFA. You want to be part of the thing. You can't stop people from playing football. No. You can say you can work other things in there. Work like, oh, wait, automatic pay cuts or whatever. But you just told people we're going to lock you out.
Right.
It just seems, just feels absurd.
Yeah, it is.
Jamie Vardy returns for Leicester City, but they're held by Wolves 0-0. Do you still think they'll finish top four?
Well, they won 1-4 now. You know, and we said this is James Maddison's team, and not really. Not in that game where Wolves they went. You know, they were there to defend, and they did that really well. And we saw they do the same against Chelsea a couple of weeks ago. But they missed Jamie Vardy big time. Now it's Liverpool in the next game, following weekend in the league, the next league game.
It's a battle for top four, Liverpool.
So it'll be Chelsea, Liverpool, or Leicester. One of those three will miss out because United and City will finish top four. So it'll be one of those three that will miss out.
No love for Spurs, Everton.
I don't think
the Mighty Hammers.
I think for me, between those three, so we will have to see. But they need to go back and winning ways and get a good run together. That's for sure. Zlatan and Cristiano are not the only golden oldies in Serie A, Gab, and to be scoring in Serie A. How about Goran Pandev, who scored twice for Genoa, who upset Napoli? Your title winner prediction.
All right, well, first of all, for Napoli, everybody's injured, right?
Come on.
No, I'm sorry. Like, look, at the back, there's no Koulibaly. Manolas gets injured. Maximovic decides to be terrible. They still did enough to win. They hit the woodwork, blah, blah, blah.
Are they still going to win the league?
Probably not. But can we show some love to Goran Pandev?
Yeah, of course. Please do. 37.
He's one of the good guys. He never quite goes away. It's crazy. I think he was 15 or 16 when he made his debut, and he's still playing. I mean, he and Zlatan are like outfield relics from the 90s who are still around. And you remember when he started out, people thought like, oh, Pandev, the new phenom in world football. Seriously, you think Moukoko gets hype, Haaland gets hype. Pandev was the Haaland of his day in his own way. So, I'm happy for him.
And he's going to be in the Euros in the summer with North Macedonia, which is an incredible story as well. Amazing. Amazing.
Speaking of incredible stories, David Silva returns after 6 weeks and comes off the bench, and Real Sociedad beat Cádiz 4-1. Jules, how much did you miss the genius we like to call Merlin?
And I think Real Sociedad missed him as well, and certainly their result and the performances were not as good as when he was playing and firing earlier in the season, and it's good to see him back. It's good that they won, and they won in style as well, Isak and Oyarzabal again. And this is good. This is all good because they can finish top four. You know, they're very much in that conversation. I think they're six now, but it's still quite tight. And you don't know. Maybe they can have a good push for it. Wolfsburg made it four in a row now in the Bundesliga, winning 2-0 at Augsburg. Gab, they're not fashionable or fun, but maybe show Oliver Glasner some love because they're third in the table.
I will in a minute. But first, how about we show some love to the FIFA Club World Cup?
Yes.
Because, you know, we're used to, look, everybody goes and derides this, and because in recent years, European team generally always win.
Yeah.
But we always assume that they'll always beat the champion of South America, but that's not going to happen because Palmeiras lost to Tigres. The CONCACAF revenge here.
Yeah, exactly. And André-Pierre Gignac scored the winning goal on the penalty, but still, he's been amazing. There was a discussion the other day on ESPN in our FC show about is he maybe the greatest foreign import or even the greatest player that played in the Mexican League? Maybe, but certainly if he wins
the greatest player who played in the Mexican League when Hugo Sanchez played in the Mexican League.
No, I know, but
come on,
as a foreigner, I mean, take everybody together. But you know, like certainly if he wins them the Club World Cup against Bayern or Al Ahly, we recorded some of them morning, they play on Monday afternoon.
How cool would it be in Al Ahly?
This would be amazing. But hey, well done.
I'll say this about Gignac. Okay, so when he first came up, remember he had that weird season where he scored a million goals, but they were all like with his right foot or something. And you look at this guy, and he's the size of a building, and then he decides to go to Mexico. And I'm thinking, dude, like, this is such a bad choice for you because it's hot in Mexico and whatever.
He's from the south of France, so he likes the heat.
To a point, he probably doesn't like running around in the heat.
No.
But then I also realized, you're the size of a building, and you can presumably make it count, and he has.
He's,
and I love these stories of people who say, you know what, we don't just play football in the big five European league.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay, so that was my detour.
That's a lovely detour.
But let's detour back to Wolfsburg.
Yeah.
See how hard we avoid trying to talk about Wolfsburg, that I bring up Tigres and
it's got Gignac. Nothing to do with Wolfsburg whatsoever.
Okay, so Wolfsburg, I don't think they would fault me for going on unfashionable. Stout defending, Veghorst, right, doing his thing at the other end. Again, not somebody who excites you, but the guy scores a ton of goals, and they're third in the table, and they're doing it through defending. This whole stereotype that they had in Germany, the only way to win is the Red Bull school, and let's go and press high. But no, there's more than one way to win, and Wolfsburg are showing that. That said, they're not going to be in the top four this season.
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either.
No.
Lille win away at Nantes and stay top of Ligue 1. Jules, it's been a turbulent season. How big an achievement is this? And is Jonathan David the best Canadian in the world right now? Certainly the best Canadian with two first names.
Yeah, with two, but even the one who don't have two first names, you know, he's on fire. And Christophe Galtier said after the game, this is the player has signed, because he took a long time to adapt, which is normal coming from the Belgian league, I guess. And now they've won six in
so
a row.
So far from Belgium to Lille,
it doesn't matter. It's a different style of football. They won six in a row. They're on fire. They will have big games coming up, of course. Monaco, PSG, and Lyon very much in the title race as well. But it's very good, very exciting if you're a Ligue 1 fan right now. Finally, Gab, Tampa Bay Buccaneers won the Super Bowl, beating the Kansas City Chiefs, which means Manchester United owner Joel Glazer gets to lift the trophy. I bet you're delighted for him, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm delighted for him and for Tom Brady, and who forgot to shake Nick Foles' hand, of course. No, I'm not going to let it go. Whatever. Let's move on.
Let's move on.
You don't get your way. Sorry,
here we
Andy.
Go.
Andy got his last year. That's okay. Right. That brings us to an end. But let's come back on Thursday and do this again, shall we?
Shall
we? How about that? We'll have some FA Cup action until that point. Love the game, love yourself, love your neighbor.